a show dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. This is David Stark. My co-host Justin Royer has the week off. We're glad you've joined us today. I want to remind you, though, that you can join the conversation anytime online at davidstarkcollective.com. You can also find us at Twitter. It's at Stark Collective, or if you want to, you can find the podcast on iTunes under Working with Purpose. This summer, we're doing a series called the People Series. I hope you've been enjoying it, if you've been tuning in. Every other week, we're actually interviewing leaders and people who work in businesses all around the region, talking to them about how a lot of the stuff we're talking about applies in their own businesses. We'll talk about who's coming at the end of the show next week. But we're also talking about important leaders or thinkers in the whole area of interconnectedness and this metaphor of the agile human body. And people whose faith is integrated in various ways into the business vision and practice of their organization. I'm excited to talk about three authors today, which we'll get to in a second, but I want to tell a story to start out with. In the 90s, one of the movements that's it's happened three or four times before in recent American history was called the Corporate Social Responsibility Movement, and it's called CSR for short. And this is when people began to be giving awards for companies that were responsive to the environment, companies that were treating their employees well, companies that were paying fair price for things. And there began this whole movement, and they were giving out awards for corporate social responsibility various places. And then kind of at the peak of the 90s, guess who got all the awards? A company called Enron got all these awards. And then, of course, we found out that it crashes in 2001. And one of the reasons is that Ken Lay said, you know, my goal is to be as the richest man in the history of the world. And that based upon that, it torpedoed. And what I want to say now is that today a whole nother language is being used called conscious capitalism. It's a movement but going way beyond corporate social responsibility. But here's the question. Is this really something different today? Right? What will it take to create an environment that encourages more executives and leaders to balance personal ambition with societal imperatives? Right? Or was Milton Friedman right when he said that the only agenda for business is shareholder return? Now, before I get to those questions and the answers, I want to share something I think is really critical here. Because every time we go through this kind of movement, there, first of all, are the people that are, you know, very, very positive. You know, the age of Aquarius is about to happen. That dates me. Today it's called the age of transcendence. But they're super, super positive that somehow we have, you know, changed the nature of humanity. And it's all going to be great. And there's always the opposite, right? Those doomsdayers who think, you know, we're 5 minutes from Armageddon. You know, it's just going to get awful, and it's getting worse by the day. In fact, Andy Stanley saw this so much in his church lately. He's a big pastor in Atlanta. That he actually had to give a sermon that rebuked the kind of over-middle agers because they were being so negative that all the, you know, young people in the church were thinking, well, it's doomsday, right? But let's get real biblically. The wheat and tares parable gets very clear with us, right? The wheat and tares basically says until Jesus comes again, they're both going to grow. The wheat's going to grow, so there's going to be positive stuff, and the tares are going to grow, which are negative stuff. And that's always going to be the picture. It's always going to have great positive and great negative. I'm a botanist by background. What wheat and tares are like is they look exactly the same until just before harvest, and then the tares, the grain head, flips downward, and it has nothing of value in it. So you can't see the difference, the point is. And if we're honest with each other, we both have times where we're more like sheep and times where we're more like wolves. So it's always going to be that reality. So I want us to get beyond either of those extremes today and really look at these questions together. And I want to talk about three great thinkers. Their names I won't get quite right, but one's Raj Cicilleri, and one's Jag Shaith, and the other is David Wolf. They've written a book called Firms of Endearment, and it's how world-class companies profit from passion and purpose. And they're going to argue in this book, and they have in their second edition, that we actually definitely are in a different place. And so we're going to look at that today and why that's possibly true. But first of all, it's the language they use is this. They on one hand, it's Milton Friedman's point of view that the only purpose of business is shareholder or ownership value. That's one extreme. But they juxtapose that to what they call stakeholder relationship management, or SRM. And that means that all five stakeholders are important today for businesses to be ethical and responsible. What they mean by that is they've got a and we'll put this in the show notes. They have an acronym called SPICE. That means the five stakeholders are society, so local and broader communities, as well as governments. They're a person you have to take seriously, and that's where the environment is also included. The P stands for partners, which upstream partners such as suppliers, horizontal partners, and downstream partners such as retailers. Got to take them seriously as a stakeholder. Investors, obviously, individual and institutional lenders, customers. So you got to take them seriously, individual organizational customers, and finally employees, current, future, and past employees and their family. That's what SPICE stands for. Actually, the biblical root of this, my first book called Working with Purpose, which this show is named after, there really are five stewardships biblically. And stewardship, by the way, was the ancient word and biblical word for leadership. It literally means hold in trust. And what I was pointing out in a Christian theology of business is that, biblically speaking, there are five stewardships, just like these five areas of SPICE. And those five areas are, first of all, the vision of the company. We hold in trust the vision of the company, what its calling is in the world. We hold in trust the capital that we're given in various ways. We hold in trust the people that are working for us, employees, if you will, and other connectors. We hold in trust the markets that we're in, which have to do with all the vendors and all the suppliers and downstream and stuff around us. We also hold in trust the environment and the communities around us. So it's just very parallel that a biblical understanding of full stewardship includes all five of those. And that's exactly where we're going today with what the Firms of Endearment book is all about. Now, well, I want to give you a little reminder here. You're listening to Working with Purpose with David Stark and usually Justin Royer. You can tune in at davidstarkcollective.com. You can give us comments. You can on Twitter, at Stark Collective, or even on iTunes. We love positive reviews where the podcasts are, so you can come in there. But let's kind of continue this whole idea today, because we want to dive into why is it different today? And first of all, let's just talk about the numbers. The Firms of Endearment authors looked at companies that were doing this stakeholder relationship management, all five of these, well. And here's what they found. In a 10-year period of return on investment, probably return on capital in this case, there was 1,026% better than just the S&P. And whereas the S&P 500 was only 122% better. What that means in English is this: the Firms of Endearment were eight times better than the S&P 500 in terms of return. So that's one statistic. They also compared it to the good and great companies. You may know Jim Collins did work at companies that went from good to great. And over 10 years, the Firms of Endearment were three times better. Over 5 years, they were 1.7 times better than the good to great companies. Over 3 years, though, the good to great companies were slightly better by 0.2%. So it was really more longer term that they were doing. So the numbers are saying, yes, we ought to be doing this. But you know what? There's still a vast majority of companies that are not there yet. So even when the numbers say that, you know, what's going to cause them to go forward? I want to talk about that, and will they really change today? So let's talk about some of the things that are leading to this. First of all, this is what the authors argue as the first force, and that's the sense of generativity. If you remember Eric Erickson and all the stages of adult growth, in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, there's a stage of adult life that's called generativity versus stagnation. This is when actually generativity literally means it's the disposition to help the next generation. I can't tell you how many people around me, men and women both, in these ages are starting to ask, well, what can I give back? You know, I've gone through the years of acquiring, or hopefully I have actually made some. Not everybody has, but the ones that have are saying, okay, so how can I do? I'll give you a couple of stories. I have a friend named Tom, very, very successful investment banker, and then he was a venture capitalist. But really in his life, he's kind of saying, I don't just want to make more money now. How can I begin to give back to the next generation or other people? And I've kind of walked his journey as he's searching for something more. I also have a well-known lawyer, I'll call him Rich, who was management partner at a place. And he also got to the place where, you know what, I want to move towards being on mission in the world. And so you can see this around you. Actually, I have a friend of mine who's single. He's dating a lot of women, or at least having coffee with them. And they're all asking for godly men who are about something bigger. So you can see this whole generativity. And their point is that in that period, because there's lots of leaders of companies and a lot of financial wherewithal, is going that direction because the baby boomers are in that time of generativity. And the other definition of that would be sustainability. And sustainability, by the author's definition, is this: meeting the needs of the present generation without compromising the ability of the next generation to meet their own needs. So they're going to say one force is we've got the people who have the money right now and are in the places of leadership are moving into those stages. That's very definitely a force. But I'm going to add some others today, because the premise of our program is that interconnectivity is also a powerful force that makes things different today. I'm going to talk about specifics about this. So the first thing that makes this different, well, actually, you know what? Let's take a break. I'm going to come back and we'll talk about interconnectivity and how that's making a difference today in why this new force of conscious capitalism isn't just another flavor of the week. Be right back.
You're listening to Working with Purpose, a program dedicated to exploring topics around the intersection of faith and business, and viewing leadership through the lens of the body of Christ. We'll get back to more in a moment. First, I want to remind you of the opportunity to dialogue with David and Justin on these important topics. You can join the conversation, sign up to receive blog posts, get updates on upcoming events and offerings, and more through their website, davidstarkcollective.com. That's davidstarkcollective.com. Or find them on Twitter, @StarkCollective. David and Justin are also available to speak on a variety of topics related to working with purpose, and will help you go beyond discussing these concepts to putting them into action. They team up together to advise and consult with businesses, organizations, and ministries. Find out more by going to davidstarkcollective.com and opening either the speaking or consulting pages of the platform. Now, let's get back to part two of Working with Purpose.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Working Purpose with David Stark and Justin Royer. You can get on this conversation at davidstarkcollective.com, or you can find us on Twitter @StarkCollective, or even the podcast on iTunes under Working with Purpose. Today we're talking about the question, and some authors who wrote a book called Firms of Endearment, is this most recent round of conscious capitalism, is it just another flavor of the week, or is something fundamentally different that's changing that makes it possible for people, leaders in business, and a direction that balances personal ambition with societal needs and impact, including the environment and employees and markets, et cetera. And we the first half, we talked about one of the big forces that's going that direction is the generativity stage that people in midlife are in. But I want to suggest a few more that make this different, at least make the possibility that we're going to have a much more lasting force in this whole area. And so let's talk about interconnectivity. And what interconnectivity means today is this, is that all the stakeholders, the employees, the investors, the customers, the communities that you're in, other competitors, your suppliers, they all can talk to each other now. And they all can talk to each other publicly, right? And so consequently, there is a consequence today if there is egregious kind of behavior in any one of those five stakeholder areas they can go public with it. It's on Facebook. It's on LinkedIn. It's on whatever it is that might be a site. And so consequently, that causes many companies to have to take seriously what the feedback that's going on. They can get voted off the island really fast if something bad's going on. So they don't just get away with it as much anymore. And so, consequently, you know, I remember, for example, I was talking to, I gotta give you a good example of this, and that was, I was talking to a person about the long-term effect on BP of the spill, the oil spill we went through. Well, that was egregious enough, but you know what? All day, every day on television, we were watching that spill that hadn't been filled in. And believe me, BP had to, they had to basically energize everything to buy back their reputation and all of that. And so it's events are public by any of these stakeholders these days. That creates what? That creates these things. It creates transparency. Companies have got to be transparent about what's happening in their lives. It creates a bigger accountability because all the stakeholders are now, not just the shareholders, are weighing in on what's happening. And, of course, it creates consequences. And those consequences are part of the reason that there is much more teeth to the movement of conscious capitalism today than it has been in any of the other movements that have been parallel to this in the past. So that's one of the reasons that interconnectivity is actually a large force in creating accountability today for organizations. I'm going to give you a second one, though, that's very powerful. And that's, it's actually an offshoot of the interconnectivity, and that's the millennials. See, they grew up on Facebook. What does that mean? That means they grew up interacting about everything. They're very public in their social networks about things that you and I would be very embarrassed about. They're talking about, in fact, I talked to one of them, we said, we're the feedback generation. So we get feedback from each other. That's how we vet everything. You know, we'll trust what our friends say about something, or even about what, you know, comments on Amazon say about a book, more than we will what they're trying to market us, because we've been marketed to since we're zero, right? So consequently, marketing is no longer a monologue. It just isn't. It's now a dialogue. And they will express their concerns. They will talk to each other about it big time. And so that the openness about situations is very important. But let me tell you what this also means for millennials. Number one, they want to work for companies that actually take the five stakeholders seriously. So if there's something bad going on with the employees, something bad going on with the environment, if the CEO is making 500 times as much money as the other person is, these things matter to them. They don't want to work for it. And they won't work for it if they can shift gears. So that's a big force. But secondarily, they want to buy from it. They want to buy from these companies that are taking these things seriously. So consequently, there is a huge sense. Here's why. Because for millennials, many things that they buy is a statement about what they value. It's a statement about what they believe. Just think of tattoos. Most tattoos, when you talk to millennials or any other people for that matter, it's a statement about what they believe, or at least a major transition in their life. So are the clothes that they're wearing. So is the car that they're driving. So is X and Y and Z. And so that's a powerful force in the marketplace today about taking all the stakeholders seriously and not just return on capital for the investors. In fact, I was at a conference with Gary Hamel, very well, and we were talking about him on the show here, very well-known management consultant, one of the consultants of the year. He's a Christian. But he had a CEO in from Norway who's a big oil and gas company. And the CEO was talking about how they were taking seriously the how they use capital and allowing the employees to influence the directions that they go. And see, it was a great talk about one of the stakeholders. But at the end of the thing, one of the millennials in the room raised their hand, right? And so he's up front and says, yes, what would you like to ask? He said, what about the environment? You're still an oil and gas. He had no problem challenging this world-class CEO right there about the fact that he's an oil and gas. And that's typical of this generation. They are going to carry this. They care about it deeply. And so that's another force that makes it much different today that has to do with interconnectivity. I want to give you a third one here that's really important, and that's this. Interconnectivity means we've had digital revolutions back to back to back in the last two decades. What does that mean? That means that the pace of change in our world has just skyrocketed. It also means that competition's coming from all over the world. and not just from your local markets today. And what that means is that the power, the real power of the market has been shifted to the consumer, and it's been shifted outside the walls of the organization, which means that means you can't trust market share anymore. You may or may not have that market share next year, for example. So they have to create organizations that are now flexible, adaptable, less hierarchical. In fact, they're using the sense of complex adaptive organizations. Guess what the major complex adaptive organization is? The human body. We are the most complex adaptable organization. So everything's being mirrored off of it. Everything's being used as the master image that way because of the pace of change. Another way to put this is there's only temporary competitive advantage today. You can't have permanent competitive advantage. It's going to change next year. And so that means this interconnectivity is causing organizations to be less hierarchical, more responsive, more flexible, and therefore more organic in nature. Let me give you one more that's really important, and that's this. And that is that interconnectivity means that if you're going to have loyalty from customers or anybody else, you can't just do the legal contract, right? Yeah, we delivered what we said we'd deliver. But there's now an emotional contract. In other words, it's moved from share of wallet only to share of heart. In fact, this is what they argue in the book, the author does, that loyalty is a very emotional thing. So if I don't connect to this company under some kind of loyalty, and let me tell you the difference between loyalty and repeating customers. Repetitive customers means I liked it enough that I'll buy again. Loyalty means I don't care if your price is higher. I'm still going to buy from you. And that's they argue this is the most decisive competitive difference almost in the history of capitalism. Because now it's an emotional contract, if you will. Now, let me bring all this home. Because what's the heart of this mean? In my opinion, here's the biblical heart of why this is leading towards a wonderful place. There's a parable of the bigger barns, I call it, in the Gospels. And it basically argues of this really successful farmer who had a bumper crop, but he could only think of one thing to do with that bumper crop. And that was store it in his barns. Why? So he could eat, drink, and be merry, and so he could feel secure. In other words, I call it the acquiring myth. And that is that when you're only focused on capital, the goal of life is to acquire as much as possible. Why? So you can do whatever you want with your leisure time, eat, drink, and be merry, and you can feel secure. The problem is, as Jesus says very clearly, you're gonna basically be accountable for all of this. Why? Because the other stakeholders aren't being taken seriously. Your employees aren't. The giving away is not being taken seriously. You're not taking seriously the markets. On the other hand, there's the parable of the stewards over the vineyard or of the hotel, if you will, in ancient times. They're given tasks. In other words, you're on assignment. When you believe in your heart that your company, that you, that your department are on assignment, you will take all five stakeholders seriously because not only you have a calling, but the corporation has a calling. And consequently, the idea of just not taking all those other stakeholders seriously is just outside of the venue of, no, I'm on assignment. And therefore, everything interconnected with me matters. And so we're actually, not because there's a Christian revival, but because of all these forces, there's a much greater possibility that the wheat might win more than the tares in the next season of capitalism. At least I think we're going to see more and more companies having to go there in order to be competitive in the marketplace today. So that's really what I want to talk about today. It's a very powerful movement. It's a better answer to why conscious capitalism may have a longer duration and a much more powerful influence in our world because of the realities not only of generativity of the older generation, but all these realities not only of millennials, but of interconnectivity that is creating accountability, it's creating a transparency, it's creating now an emotional spiritual contract with customers, not just the legal one. And that, in my opinion, bowls right down the alley of being on assignment as God wants us to be, rather than just acquiring as much as possible. It's a really great book, Firms of Endearment. 2 weeks from now, I'm going to talk to you. Well, but how do you actually pull this off? And they have great, great ideas of why stakeholder relational management, why it works, And I'm going to give you all kinds of details about that for your organizations and your companies here. Well, you've been listening to Working with Purpose today. We've been doing this people series. I hope you've been enjoying it, about where we bring up authors like we did today, firms of endearment. We also have people coming in. I just want to tell you that next week, Doug Berg is going to join us. Doug Berg is a serial entrepreneur. He's created companies over and over again worth over $100 million. He's doing it again right now. We're going to get to hear about Tracker IF, I think it's been renamed, next week. And he also is going to talk about others that he's built. He's got some great reflections as a Christian about what's happening in the IT space, so I hope you'll tune into that. We're going to have a great conversation with him. We'd like to thank you, by the way, for listening. By the way, you can get a hold of me at davidstarkcollective.com or email me at david@davidstarkcollective.com. Thank you for listening today. This has been Working with Purpose with David Stark. We'll see you next week.